welcome to episode of the Under the Helmet Podcast. We are going to try something different for the episode. Normally, I'm going to ask the questions, but today, I guess I'm the interviewee. Person interviewing me is defensive tackle, defensive lineman, currently of the Tuskegee Airmen, maybe elsewhere next year, our guy T. Smith. What's going on, T?
What's good with you, Terry? How's it going?
It goes well. It goes well. Now, like I said, I've never done this. I don't know what you're about to ask. Ask away.
Hey, today we got our guest, Terry Biggs. How's it going?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Okay, I just got, you know, a few list of questions that I, you know what I'm saying, been wanting to ask and, you know, and probably other people and answer some questions that probably just been, you know, unanswered so far. So I want to start from the top with asking you, what made you start writing and doing articles and podcasts?
Well, I used to write about from 97 to about 04. I wrote for an online website. I got to go to NFL draft. I covered the NFL draft, thing like that. I moved to Wisconsin in 04. Took about a decade off, you know, settled down, got married, had kids. Then as I'm holding my daughter, we're watching the Raiders game. I look on my phone, there's a Twitter. And I was looking on Twitter, it's like, oh, we're looking for a dedicated writer to cover the Oakland Raiders. Boom. Sent my resume, sent a sample of my work. It kind of started from there. I started off as like a once every couple of weeks guy, worked my way up to editor. Now I'm like a senior NFL editor. I cover football. I cover semi-pro, pro, now college, even do some pro wrestling stuff. And as far as the podcast thing, it wasn't really my choice at first, but then I, you know what? It's a way of reaching out to different people who may not have a voice. Give them a look into their lives and see what's what. Because when all this is done, when all football is done for so many, they can pull up this podcast, show it to their kids, show it to their grandkids, or make them listen to it. Hey, this was your great-grandfather or your grandfather when he was balling back in Alabama in, like, the 2000s. It's a legacy
right,
thing.
Right. Okay, so, you know, with anything in life, you always start out and kind of just, like, be in the beginning. You be like, oh, I'm trying something. And then you, at some point, you have to, like, kick in the gear and see that you can really be something special at it. So at what age did you start taking it serious?
Well, like I said, about the podcast thing, it was more of, like, kind of walked into it. And then I did a show, did a couple of shows. And now, like I said, I'm about, if you incorporate all the podcasts I do, probably about 700 or 800 in.
Wow. That's crazy. That's a lot. That's a lot of talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, so we can get to like the AP to avail and stuff like that. Like what led to you noticing or I should say like wanting to start covering things that was going on, you know, in this league kind of.
I covered leagues up here. I covered another national league, and then I was kind of flipping through, and somebody who I know, one of the smartest people in this game, Sherwin Gilliam, he's the GM, vice president, one of the owners of the Crescent City Kings. They were making a move from the GDFL to the APDFL. He's like, we'd like you to follow us and kind of see what's what. Then I take a look deeper and deeper because the Louisiana Blazing Bulldogs were a dominant team in other leagues. They played a couple of years in APDFL, and then I got to read about the Falcons, the Pritchard Falcons, them.
Yeah.
And that moved into the Mississippi Dynasty, and now we're here.
Okay. All right, so knowing that you, at this point in your career, that right now, as of right now, you cover probably about 5 to 6, maybe more leagues, how do you keep up with what's going on in each league? Or more importantly, how do you keep up with, you know, with what players are doing what in each league, you know?
A lot of film study. Like, my inbox has more film in it than an old Blockbuster. I have just messages and, oh, check out this game film, check out this game film. And I keep notes. I'm old school where, yes, I type a lot on my computer, but also have a pen and paper. I keep notes. My girlfriend will tell you now that I have more notebooks in my house than I should. Just about things I see in football, little nuances. I see things. I see different things I notice, and I keep them separate. And when I come up with these lists, when I come up with articles, I come up with podcasts, I can look back at my notes and know what I'm talking about.
Right, right. I mean, I feel like when I look at, when you put your top 50 rankings and stuff out, I always notice that out of, you can put up 50 players, and every, out of all those 50 players, each one of them, you're going to have a description of what they do well. And that just goes to show me that, like, you really be paying attention to the games. Because I can't even name 50 players in this league and actually just be like, oh, yeah, this is what he does well. This is what he's good at. This is what he is going to affect the game. And you say that about every single player that you have in the top 50. You have a good, you know, written little paragraph about what they bring to the game. And that's dope to me.
The players deserve it, because this is how I see it. On Saturdays, no matter what league you're on, what league you're in, you travel away from your family, you travel away from your kids, girlfriends, families, whoever, jobs. You are spending money to go play. You are taking hits at this level for free. You're putting miles, not just on your car, but on your body. And the players deserve better. They deserve a voice. They deserve something where they can say, you know what? These are my accomplishments. This podcast is right. All this, never, ever about me. I take $0 from semi-pro.
Right.
The NFL stuff, the college stuff, paid me well enough. Nothing from semi-pro. Not a dime, because this is where I figure it. There are players who may not make a dime in this, but they play for the love of it. I do it because I want those players to have something when they retire to hold on to.
Right. Now, I agree with everything you said, you know. Okay, we're going to get to a little bit more of the AP to Avail. I want to get into a little bit more tougher questions to see, like, because a lot of people be wanting to know how Terry thinks when it comes to teams and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to pick up on some of these. So I want you to give me your top three favorite teams to watch on film so far this season in the AP to Avail.
As a fan,
you know, like when you watch them, you just be like, ah, oh, man, you know, like you see something, you know, it's good. It makes you feel like almost like you're watching college football or something.
One of them, like, do they have to be in order, or can I just in no particular order?
No, I wouldn't want you to put them in order.
Okay, no particular order. One of them has to be the Georgia Thrashers. Here's why. I like the fact that there are times, and it seems like they're doing a lot more of running the ball. They have a potent offense. They have two good quarterbacks. Not just one, they have two. They have one of the elite quarterbacks and Kyvon Taylor, and they have the best backup quarterback I think I've seen in semi-pro for the longest time in Cedric Jefferson. Said doesn't say much. He just goes and plays. And if anything ever happened to Taylor, Seth could step in and you may not miss a beat. I like that. I like the fact that on defense, their defensive line is so deep. They just keep running and running and running different linemen at you. When I look at their defense, though, one of the most interesting players to watch is Clarence Jackson. Jack, number 99. Just
He plays football
the way it's meant to be. He plays football.
He plays it angry and smart to me. He plays it angry but smart.
He's like, I'm sure you watch Marvel. You've seen the Gray Hulk with the glasses. He's like super smart. He's like funny, and he's not like the green freaking out guy. That's Jack. Jack has that mentality of he's going to hit the hole, find his gap, and punish whatever's in his way. But he does it under control, where there's no headhunting, there's no stupidity, there's no just nonsense. He plays the game hard, and he plays the game right. Jack is one of the best players to watch in this league. Second, Mississippi Dynasty, for the simple fact that they've been good for so long. And when they lost last year, they had to take a lot of looks in the mirror where they – left pissed off, where they knew they had to come back and try one more at it. And to a man, one of the most talented teams I've ever seen in semi-pro, all over the field, where you have playmakers at receiver, you have a strong offensive line, you have a front four that is just, I mean, people don't give Lewis Ellis and Sam Washington much credit because they're not real talkers. They just kind of just go up, get their 9 to 12 sacks, dominate, go home. And it's right there. And one of the players on that team, he might be mad when I say this, but that is one of the better players, that Jay Hicks, number 4. Why? When he wants to, he is hell on wheels at linebacker. He is hell on wheels at running back. Game changer, affects games, and plays with a forceful mindset. And I think that even though the Kings beat them, the Dynasty, this, if they do meet up in a rematch, this game will be even closer. That leads to the third team, the defending champs, the Christie Kings. I've seen them from the GDFL, where they had one of the most heartbreaking losses in the international championship game. I've seen them build. They had a couple of down years. They won with, 26 guys last year, based on the fact that of their coaching staff. If anyone ever came out of retirement to play, they would want to play for Coach Animal, because he inspires you to be your best. Even when you don't have your A game that day, you're going to find a way to get it done. And he demands not perfection. He demands excellence, which is different. He demands you be good. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be good. Those are three teams that I could see just watching for so long, especially this year, that are probably the most exciting.
Oh, that's very dope. I mean, I agree with you on all three of those teams. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, Dynasty, for sure, powerhouse team. Always had their name there. Chris City Kings, I definitely like them. They coach is like a motivational. He could be like one of them motivational speeches that you can pull up on YouTube to me. Like, his voice, his tone, and everything. Like, he one of them coaches that he'll get you fired up and stuff. And, of course, Cam and Batum, they know I had more respect for those guys. So, I agree with all three of those. You know what I'm saying? So, my next question is, like, what's the most prestigious position in the league, in your opinion, or most talented?
Well, the deepest has got to be wide receiver. The most prestigious and the most talented defensive line. Everything on the defense starts up front. Nothing happens without goodness up front. You can be great in a secondary. You could be a great in linebacking core. But if you don't have those 3 or 4 guys up front to set the tone, you're lost. And each of those teams I mentioned, they have it up front. And championships are won there. People say defense wins championships. That's true, but defensive lines win championships.
Hey, man, the front and the back work together, you know? Front and the back work together. So, I mean, saying that, that led me to my next question, which is 2 questions combined, but you can just answer it. So, I want you to, at first, to give me, just for this year, your top 5 edge rushers, then give me your top 5 defensive linemen.
Ooh, okay, let me see.
Traditional defensive line. We talking about guys that, you know, like I said, defensive lineman and edge rushers. I think me and you had a conversation in the comments, something like that before. Like, you have edge rushers, people like defensive ends. Then you have defensive line, which I consider people who mostly, you know, with, you know, 275-pound type of guys, you know, heavier guys, you know, 265 and up, I would say. Those guys, you know, not the edge, you know, so split them up for me. Give me 5 edge rushers and 5 defensive linemen.
Okay. But this is what we're going to do. I'm going to take a quick break because, like I said, I don't charge semi-pro because some of it is I'm off the commercials pay what I do. So we're going to take a quick commercial and be back. You're listening to the Underhammer Podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back on the podcast. Terrence Figgs, T. Smith, the questioner. Now, before the break, I was asked top 5 edge rushers and top 5 defensive linemen. Those who, I say give it 260 and above. Top 5 edge rushers. Well,
this year, though, you know, based everything off of this year.
Based on this year, Got to go with our guy, Rook, Marquavius Favors from the Georgia Thrashers. Just for a 195-pound guy, he gets the most out of it.
Like, wow.
He gets the most out of it. And come around that corner, you as a
ain't
blocker.
Ain't he hard, though? Like, that dude, like, that's why I said, wow, didn't mean to cut y'all, but the dude can go, man. He can go.
As a rusher, you have to make up your mind. You either have to try to get in front of him, but he's too fast, or you try to get your hands on him. He's too quick. So you might see teams either they have to pick somebody to double, but they have so much depth on that line, somebody's going to come free. But he is one. Now, this one is interesting because this is a no order. So I'm going to go with another guy, maybe the smartest edge rusher in the league, Darius Gillette. Debo
from the Thrashers. Debo.
One Debo. Of super bright. Like, not just bright for football, but a bright human being. Like, understands the human condition as far as football itself. Can relate things and be able to articulate them very well. Now, this one is interesting because Amari Jackson from the Storm.
Mm-hmm.
About 6'6", 250-ish. If he ever uses his hands as far as placement to their full potential, that man is going to be a problem.
He's so much raw talent, man.
Issue for somebody. And this is him learning without, like, this is him learning the game as it goes. And he's still young, like 23-ish, 24 maybe. If he gets a line coach or a position coach or goes to like a rush camp, he can possibly be the first person to possibly 30 sacks. He has that potential at this level.
Right. And to be honest, so high.
He should be playing somewhere else. He should be somewhere like in Canada or playing at a higher level. He should be somewhere right now. That's three. Top of my head. Even though he is not 260 and lower, I go with Justin Robinson. Without a doubt, in my entire covering semi-pro, the best pass rusher I've ever seen. But a simple fact that as big as he is, he just doesn't use strength. He can use the ability to have his footwork beat the blocker, has his handwork beat the blocker. He's just not going to bull rush somebody or just use the same, I'm going to beat you wide. Now, scrolling
Jordan,
down.
Yeah. Jordan, I just want to call J-Rock. Like, to me, he's Jordan, you know what I'm saying, of the DNs. Like for him to come in, what he did, like, first when he came around, everybody been, like, people are going to follow his blueprint, like, to want to be that big, that fast, that smart, that all that.
Now, here's a guy where edge rushers are, this guy here, he may be one of the best natural football players in the league. Now, he plays a little edge. He plays linebacker. Hell, he played center against the Dynasty in spots. Dwayne Fleming from the Kansas City Kings. Dwayne is good at everything he does on the field. Like, yeah, he gets a little wild on the lives, and he gets super, like, amped up, and we're here for it. But when that helmet is on and he's on the field, he's trying to affect somebody's life. He is trying to make a play. And if he's solely stuck at edge rusher, he would be phenomenal. But he can play just about anything. And he plays – Dwayne plays like he has $1.85 in his pocket and it's time to eat. He plays hungry all the time. He plays like there is nothing outside of that game that doesn't exist when he's on that field. Now, as far as defensive linemen, I'm going to throw in some tackles in here. Now, I mentioned, I'll go with three. Actually, I'll go with four. No order. Lewis Ellis. Lewis Ellis is possibly the strongest defensive tackle I've seen at this level. Freakish strength. Not just freakish strength, like guy played in the league. Freakish, not just that, but can play an end too. Can play an end, and he's like 285, 90 pounds-ish. And can play end, and can set the edge, and just goes, and takes up a blocker or two. As a nose, he can play a three tech, strong. He has a few, he has many, as many years as he wants to play left. Now, I already mentioned Sam Washington. Sam quietly is dominant. He doesn't talk about himself. He doesn't brag on himself. Others do it for him. That's the truest sign of somebody that knows who they are. You will never see this man promote himself. He shows up, puts the helmet on, plays ball, goes home. Now, these two tackles here. Now, another guy that I saw, actually, out of these three tackles, Carlos Kohler from the Kings. A couple years ago, before he broke his hand, he had the best season for a defensive tackle in this league. Just dominant. Forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, touchdowns, sacks, tackles for loss. If his hand is truly healed and he is right, the Kings are going to be a difficult out. Now, the last two guys, I can just think off my head, Marcus Singleton from the Thrashers, Future.
Future, my guy.
Man had a rough year last year, dealt with some stuff on and off the field, got his head clear, came back in shape, like smaller than he's been in a minute. But more importantly, he's playing with an urgency because he really wants to win. And like I said, he put a bad year behind him to make a good year. Next, our guy, you. I've seen you because you, again, you went from a team that didn't put your name out there, didn't go out there much, just you had to kind of scramble to get your own stuff together. You found a new team that you were a little more visible. Wherever you go next, it has to be somewhere that will showcase your talent. Like this year, Coach Bear, Quentin Patrick, one of the smartest guys in this business. I have so much respect for Coach. One of the better players, too. I'm surprised he's even retired. But as a coach, he tried to get the most out of his players. That is somebody who is going to be a high school, college, whoever, a football coach somewhere. And he definitely tried to make sure that his defense was schemed around up front. Now, right. if you stay there, if he's there, cool. If he's not there, you got decisions to make.
You hear that, don't it, Bell? Yeah. I appreciate that, though. I appreciate that. You know, that's gonna have to be a whole nother thing when we talk about, you know, locations and stuff. But, you know, the next question is, give me top four or top five of your linebackers. That'll be like the last top five with everything. Your top four or top five linebackers this year.
In no order. That you watch.
No order.
Okay, we'll go with Dwayne Fleming again from the Kings. He's just a dog. Just Dwayne will shoot that gap. He will make that fullback, if they have one, pay. He'll make the guard pay. Corey Wells, he's seen every offense. He knows how to put himself in every spot to make the best plays. Intuitive, still has the athleticism to get there. One of the better ones. I mentioned Jack. Jack plays some running back this year. If Jack focused on playing running back, he'd be the best running back in the league. If Jack focused on being an edge rusher, he'd be the best. He's the guy that we all grew up with that was good at every sport that pissed you off. Because no matter what sport you choose, he'd be good at it.
Right.
Here's a name, DeCoven Ware from the Cobras.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. He is everywhere on the field. He swarms to the ball. He makes sound decisions. He's an evolving textbook tackler. Jason Williams from the Airmen. I see in a high ceiling with him. I think that with him, once he finds a team that he wants to stay with for a while, just let him go. Just let him go. One of the guys that people don't talk about as far as one of the better leaders is a linebacker. It's Jeremy Judge from the Mississippi Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little younger than I am, but he's still out there, and he's a leader. Like, people follow this man because he's not trying to – he's not a glory hog. He just wants to win. They've won a lot out there, and he wants to win it again. Do you have any other, like, top fives? Because I have all the answers. That top five, pick a position, and I got you.
I'm gonna come back to the top five for another few ones, but I do want to ask you this: name one player in the league that you feel comes off very unlikable, but you have to respect his game.
Whew. Damn,
like I'm talking about, even when we all know this one player or grew up with this one player who just like. Man, he's like a Draymond Green type person. Like, you just hate playing against him because he going to talk trash. You can just tell he plays like he don't care, but you cannot. He's going to ball. And I'll tell you my one player if you tell me yours.
Let me think. I don't really have. I don't know. I don't think there's any players in this league that I would not like. I mean, as far as just, I mean, difference of opinions are one thing. We all have those, but a lot of these players, the APDFL has that talent where they're deep. Just about every of the top 10 teams, top 15 teams, they have a playmaker out there. I'd have to think about that one. Who would you say?
Crawford.
Man, how do you not like that guy? He is the best.
No. That's my guy. Crawford is not likable on the field. Crawford's going to talk trash to you. Crawford is the type of player that when you walk out to play against Crawford, like when he hears it, he's going to laugh because he knows, like, Crawford will point out who's garbage on your D-line and be like, well, we're going to focus on him because those two are garbage. We don't have to focus on them two. We watch film on you. You can't do nothing but this and this. Like, Crawford is a very cool person. Like, this is my guy, but Crawford, like, he's not very likable if you have soft skin. Like, I would say that, like, because he's going to say something. Like, if you're not who you supposed to be, he's going to tell you, like, right there, like, right at the beginning of the snap. Like, he's that person on the field that's like, yeah, you garbage. Like, you know, I already know what you do. That spin move not going to work all game. You know, like, he's that person.
He backs it up, though. I'll give Crawford. He backs up what he says, he does. And
no, that's what I said. I said, but you have to respect the guy. I said, name one person in the league that you feel that comes off very unlikable, but you have to respect their game.
That was a hard one. You got anything else? What else you got here?
Okay. I said, okay, the next one is, name one player that doesn't show up very big on the stat sheet, but if you watch film, he plays a very big part of the team's success.
Ooh, damn, that's a good one. There's a couple. I had a couple in mind. And mm-hmm. they're both offensive linemen. Roger Gladney, Chris McCarroll. Chris McCarroll stayed with the Blackhawks throughout some player movement. One of his close friends on the team passed away. He just put his head down and he played. And they got, even though they lost in the first round and they kept it close with the Thrashers, they got to that playoffs based on his leadership. No one will see his name in the stat sheet because he's an interior offensive lineman, but he gets there. He makes plays. That's one.
I felt like it was him and I feel like it's him and Kurt though. I gotta say him and Kurt for the Blackhawks. Like they both together, like are heart and souls of the original, you know, Blackhawks team from last year and stuff. Because Kurt is a monster on the field. I promise. He makes it hurt. I promise you.
Now, as far as Gladney is the best offensive lineman I've seen in semi-pro. There are three offensive linemen throughout the history of me covering a sport semi-pro that I thought were just all-time great. Gladney, you got – there's a guy back in the day – not back in the day, but named Jonah. He played for the Crest City Kings. He's about 6'8". In about 330, played at LSU, played at, I want to say, Nicholls State. Jonah Austin, him. Crawford, another one who, I mean, playing center on such a dominant team with the Horsemen and playing center on such a dominant team now. I mean, yeah, don't let the cowboy hat fool you. He's one of those guys that doesn't show up in the sheets. But another guy, I had to give it to Joe Vines. He shows up in stats, but he's good. You can put him at any spot on the offense. He's played quarterback. He's played defensive back, wide receiver, running back. He's done it all. Kick return, punt returner.
Right.
Like, just, and not the biggest guy. He's like 5'10", about 190. But he plays like he's 6'6", and 390.
Right.
He shows up in stat sheet, but he changes the mood and culture of his receivers.
Okay. Well, since you were talking to me about the top five and stuff like that, I feel like I'm giving players what they want to hear from Terry by asking the top fives, because everybody be wanting to know, since Terry is over the top 50, what it is, top 63 this year or whatever with the Coast to Coast Elite. Everybody be wanting to know how you, where you see, like who be on your mind when it comes to five players and stuff like that, the top five. So give me your top five cornerbacks. Defensive backs, or do you want to do cornerbacks or safeties, or you want to just do DBs?
We'll do DBs because I think that there are certain cornerbacks who can play a little bit of both. Top five is wild because if we're honest, like three of them play on the same team. Actually, it's Kewon Bullock, Dejon Singleton, Joseph Weatherby. Now, Kewon Bullock is where a year ago you had Tyron Lemon and Amos Tatum, who have been dominant for years. Bullock has been dominant the entire way through. They don't throw at him because he makes plays. He locks it down. You can forget that side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Weatherby, he had the stats when he played with the Lightning. My only thing was this with him, and I'm seeing that he has calmed that down a little bit. Stop peeking in the backfield. We can see you on film looking not at the receiver, but looking over his shoulder. That's where he used to fall into certain traps. Honestly, another guy that kind of jumped up this year, John West Grant from the Thrashers. Not for the interceptions. It's the pass defense and it's the confidence. He's a man who, at times, you would, from what you heard, would just play with his head down, just not feeling it. Somewhere along the line, he got some sort of confident boost, and he plays with his hair on fire.
Right, man.
You respect.
If you see him, like I rock with John. If you see him, like on the field. He literally will walk on the field like, yo, like, this my field. You know what I'm saying? Without saying it, though. Like, he just really, like, has that type of confidence. Like, he really liked that.
One of the guys that no one talks about but had a monster season because Bobby Pons from EAP. Yes, EAP struggled mightily this year. They had all sorts of issues. But Bobby, from what I saw on film, what I've heard from the people, Bobby would track the ball, and the video shows he tracks the ball well. And he's made plays against top quarterbacks. He had a couple of picks against the Thrashers. it's because his team wasn't, they didn't have a strong year. He didn't get talked about. But I have a feeling that next year will be his breakout year if he sticks with playing semi-pro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that also goes for, like, I've seen this film, and for every good play, Bobby might occasionally get left. So as long as he keeps with the evolving tracking skills, he can be all right.
Right.
Another guy is Tyrus Chennault from the Kings. They might have the best secondary in all of APDFL. Literally, they can wheel out multiple cornerbacks. And just, if you go wide, like if you go spread, they have a man for every one of the receivers. And they play aggressive. Oh.
All those very respectable DBs, stuff like that. I do have one pushback with you, and I got to get you after this. Why no Storm defensive back?
They are in the top. I'm looking at the, because I have the official list right now, and no one's seen it, but they have in the top, let's see. I want to say in the top 45, they have two defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
I like them.
Say, come on now. We you know, I'm on the field with them guys. I mean, I ain't played them this year, but I know the two, I got a clue, you know, of the two you're talking about.
Joseph Ray.
You know, yeah, they nice, though. You know what
Joseph
I'm saying?
Joseph Ray.
But
I'm looking at it right now. Joseph Ray is if I'm looking at the top 25 of the Coastal East Coast Elite right now, and Joseph Ray is in the top 20. He's up there.
You said top 25 in the East?
No, total in the East. Oh. Sorry, in the Coastal Coast Elite, he is up there. There is only one cornerback ahead of him.
Okay. He turns
defense into offense. I like that.
You see a lot
of cornerbacks who will make a pick fall down. So
you're talking about number six, right?
Yes. I think it's six.
For the Storm.
Yeah. Yes. I think Ray is number six. I like the fact that he gives his offense a chance to either make something of that, or he'll just score himself. He had a very good year.
I know it's two of them. Well, you know, then it's, they got number five, they got number six, and they have number seven. Mm-hmm. Now, between number six and number seven, they have about 17 interceptions together.
One of the criteria I have when I come up with this list is not just stats, but who did you do it against? Mm-hmm. And a lot of players don't quite understand that. Well, it's because it's like, I'll give you an example. A couple years ago, there was a guy who played for I want to say it was the Noles. He had seven interceptions, led the league. Didn't make the list. He had five against the Alabama Tigers. I'm not going to report that.
What you were saying? My bad.
When the lights are on and when the money's on the table, how you play against top teams matters. And what you do against who, that matters. Now, you were saying?
No, I was just picking up off of when you were saying, talking about the top 50 guys. Now, I was going to say, what position has the most players in the top 50? I mean, I'm probably guessing it's the D-linemen, probably.
There are, right now, because the playoffs aren't over yet, there are eight quarterbacks. There are only three running backs. There are 13 wide receivers. There are nine offensive linemen. There are, I think right now there's 10 defensive linemen. There are six linebackers. They're about nine DBs. And then I have an athlete class where there are three specific athletes that kind of stand out.
Mm-hmm.
You got Stephen Jackson, you got Cedric Jefferson, you got Corey Kennedy. Ced played quarterback. Ced also can play free safety. He has a pick this year. Stephen Jackson might be the best leader that you've seen in this league, where he'll tell you to your face, I don't care about stats. I care about wins. And when it's third and 12, he gets you 15 yards. When it's fourth and seven, he'll get you 12.
Right.
Big money, like money on the table. Not that I'm a betting man, but if you were a betting man, if you had a bet that he would get that first down, you get that first down. Then there's Corey Kennedy. Corey is, I've seen him play quarterback for the Kings. I've seen him play wide receiver. I've seen him play cornerback. I've seen him return kicks. Good at everything.
I mean, I feel like if you're going to put, when we're talking about athletes, then you can move Rook from DN to the
athlete.
I mean, from a D, yeah, you know, to athlete. And you can, and I actually have to say Tommy Sims from the Sabres also. To be honest, he's athlete.
With Rook is this. Rook is, I'm going to be honest, based on his season, Rook's in the top five. In the top five. I'm not saying who's where, but easy top five right now.
And I mean, which he should be, you know.
Like, just play quarterback last year, but if we focus on this year, edge rusher, return kicks, running back, caught pass out of the backfield, special team. Like I said, that man gets more out of 195 than anybody else you'll ever see. But you mentioned the guy from Sabres. Again, one of the qualifications is this. Film. I need to see it. I don't care about clips. People don't show me like a 10-second clip of you balling against the so-and-so scrub team. Nope, don't care. Send me full game clips so I can see. I want to see the play that you don't make and see where you are when other people make plays. It's not about what all you do. It's about where you are sometimes. And
okay, so I want you to go into depth in detail a little bit more about that, because I don't think a lot of players in this league understand truly how you operate the top 50. I believe some people just think that – or I can't say how you operate it, because I believe some players kind of get caught up in the ego thing and forget that you have a job to do, and that – you can't, if they're not putting themselves on notice, then it's hard to just notice them out of thousands of players. So can you kind of explain more to them the actual steps they need to take to get their film to you? Because some guys probably just out here balling and thinking like, yep, I'm going to just be in it because I know what I'm doing on the field.
Film. And a lot of it is this, where there are folks who, their teams that will drop that film the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the following week. In my inbox, I will make sure I sit down, grab a tall glass of iced tea or some ginger ale, get my pen and paper, kick back and watch, take notes. Film is important. And not just grainy film shot from a 2002 Nokia. Like, film, I need to be able to see the entire field and be able to see players doing stuff. That's important. Again, like I said, who you play well against. You could have 15 sacks. Cool. How many of those sacks came against teams with one or two wins? Because I will immediately separate those and throw those away. Quality stats. Because we all know that at times there's been a little stat padding, because everyone can't. Apparently, people don't understand if you're the running back, and I attack you by myself, I get the solo tackle. Or if you're the running back, if I get there first, I get a solo tackle. I don't need three other guys making a grand game tackle. Everyone doesn't get an assist.
Right, right.
That's what people don't understand. Like, they will ignore basic football concepts. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at it. I take that nothing people say personally. I look at the film. If somebody puts game film, quality game film up, or sends it to me, I'm not hard to find, I will watch it and I will tell you what I think. Because I've had players from other leagues send me their film. I've had the team send me the film. Because right now there are three leagues that consist of the Coast to Coast Elite. Next year, there'll be four leagues and the Inglewood Blackhawks. So we're expanding.
Right.
My hope is to make one day a legitimate national championship, a legitimate one. Not that one you have to pay with, just best team in the West, best team in the East. You meet somewhere in Kansas City or Dallas where it's in the middle, where people can get there. Because I know there are teams in the Mountain West, like the Idaho Mustangs, the Utah Revolution. They want to come East and play some of y'all.
But right.
The team in the East got to meet them somewhere. My goal is to make one legitimate national championship.
It can happen. It can happen.
Because they used to have those. And, I mean, it's about bridging the gap because, you know, one thing else that for as many good people in the sport, there are four people that I can't trust, that you can't trust. Players give of themselves. Owners pay money. There should be a balance of if you invest, you should get something out of it. If you're a player, show up to practice. Learn the plays. There are plays, and I can't say who because I'm not trying to blow up in this spot. There are games from I've watched when I've seen a wide receiver look at the quarterback and mouth the words, I didn't know what to do.
Right. Hey, man. You got to be a dog to be on the field. You got to have IQ, too, though.
Hell, yes. What other questions you got?
All right, we down to our last four questions. Speaking of the top 50 thing, how much backlash do you receive every year when you post your ranking?
A lot. It's funny to me because people are your biased. I'm like, no, I don't care. I'll tell people this. I don't care who wins these games. I don't care who loses these games. I care about a close game, a competitive game. I want a game I can throw up on a flat screen and sit back and watch. Simple fact is this, prime example. I have a almost 8-year-old girl, nonverbal autistic, loves football, athletic as hell. We will watch these games together. If it keeps her interest, if she's focused on one particular thing because she knows the rules, I've taught her football since she was a baby. If there are things that jump out to her, I'm trying to watch that too. Even when she's not here, I'm watching by myself. I want to be able to watch quality football because, on God, I hate writing about blowout games. I hate talking about blowout games. That's not fun. I don't want to see a team get 50 put on them and then other team get zero.
Exactly.
No one wants to read about that or hear about it.
Right. Very true. And we're down to our last three. Give me one team that is a few trades away or a few additions away from being a championship contender. We know the top dogs. We know who people look at like the Thrashers of the world, the Dynasty, the Kings. We talking about one team that is not headed towards the top of that mountain yet or at the top of that mountain yet that's a few trades or a few additions away from being championship contention.
The South Alabama Dolphins. Here's why. Bubba Flood coaches the way he played. Just in your face, physical, strong-willed. They're going to hit you and hit you in the mouth and hit you in the mouth a lot. If they got an offense to match that defense, they would be killing people. If they were managed to get some of that talent around Mobile, which there's a lot of talent around Mobile, because if you look at the NFL draft, everybody's from Alabama.
Right.
Offense. If they got offense, that man has earned the trust of so many people. Like, if they get offense and young offense where he can kind of mold, they're going to be problems. They're going they're going to be a problem for somebody.
Right, right. I agree. I've watched them before. I agree.
Another one, from what I hear, is because there's floating that the Blackhawks and the Sabres might merge. That team would be interesting to watch, too.
Exactly. If the Blackhawks and Sabres merge, that'd be – they would easily become championship contention team if the Blackhawks and Sabres merge with their talent. They would easily become, like, a top-ranked team. They have an amazing year.
That's the tough part. It's like where it's tough to get teams to come together and to get all in the same roof where there are, you know, there are teams that
one owner had to give up, you know, something and stuff. Yeah.
Do it for the ring. It's not about – at this level, it should never go ego. It should be about the ring.
Right. So, I mean, that leads us to our last question of the interview, which is the most important question of the whole interview to me. Does loyalty exist in semi-pro football?
At times, you're as only as loyal as your options are. Because there's a team. We all know it. You might be a free agent. You'll have teams in your inbox all summer. Oh, man, come here. We got this. We got that. We got this. If you were to get injured and have to miss a significant part of the season, will that team still be in your inbox saying, hey, man, come to the game, stay on the sidelines, you're a part of this team? Would they still include you in stuff?
Right.
Like, you look at the Dynasty. You look at the Kings. You look at the Thrashers. They have so much in common where they are coached well. They have an organized team, but they're also family. There's a point where you stop being teammates and become family. People might always say, that's my family. No, because here's the thing. Anyone can be your friend or family when things are good. But when you're down and out and things turn sideways, who's going to be there?
That's true. That's true. I mean, even with my decisions coming up, I even always just want to be a part of a team that, you know, that coaches have to understand that players are playing this for free. And when it comes to situations like this, this player has a family. Most of us, you know, have a child. Some have children. And you can get hurt. You can sprain your ankle. You can break your neck. You can break a leg. Everything out here just playing for the love of the game. And if you don't have my back as my coach, to where you can at least check up on me. I don't care if I end up having to go sit in the hospital for a few days because my leg broke or something, whatever the case. I want to be able to wake up or turn my back and see that my team is on that visitation list. Them guys is outside. They coming in one by one, checking on me and all that, which is a far stretch because I know how things be, but I think any player should want to be a part of that type of program where your coach checks on you. See how's it going with you and make sure that you is okay. You know, you are straight. And it's not just about their program because that's another problem that a lot of teams, well, I would say coaches and owners don't understand also is that this line is starting to be very thick between players and owners or coaches because you have owners and coaches that want their program to succeed and care less about the players. And it's starting to make players look at it like start to make players have less loyalty because they like, oh, well, they don't care about me. Like, so I'll go wherever I'm, you know, where they feel like they're best wanted at more. And a lot of, you know, coaches out here just care more about their program than their players. They want the program to be better. They just want to be, you know, they want to just be look good, their program to look good.
Another thing, like I said, you also got to be as low as your options are. You're not going to sit with a team who you're not seeing as evolving. If you are on a team and you can tell they are not winning or not going in a positive direction, why stay?
Yeah, leave immediately. Like, I'm at that point now that if I was to ever join a team that wasn't successful right away, I wouldn't have a problem leaving them now because I know now that it's not going to get you nowhere sitting there. I'll never make that mistake ever again since. you know, in the beginning with the first team I ever went to. And it's like, I'll never make that mistake again of sitting there thinking like the loyalty card is going to get me somewhere. It won't. Go and get a ring. You don't want to be this person in this league that's been here 7, 8, 9 years or whatever later and you never smelt the ring. Me and Justin Robinson talked about this before, and he said that ultimately made part of his decision to join the dynasty because he said he want to be on a disciplined team that want to win and he want a ring. And I told him, like, man, you starting to look like Arizona right now without the ring. You done accomplished everything in this league. And, you know, and he just don't have the ring yet. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, that's exactly how I feel.
Speaking of that, we have to give our guy a shout out here. Pat Kimball. Never talks, yeah. Just plays, and just he grinds. Pat is respectable. He's respected. Like, he just kind of goes in and plays. Just goes in there and gives all of it. One of the truly good people in there. Just that's another thing. If you are any free agent, know one thing: go to a team that has a plan. Mike Tyson said it best. Everybody has a plan till they get punched in the mouth. So when things go bad, look around you. There are teams in this league that have had a rough situation, and you could tell when they have pulled out of it. Hell, I'll give examples. The Kings, they were about 500 last year.
6-4.
They had to win out. Went out.
Yep. Yep.
And went on the greatest postseason run I've seen.
They changed the league forever.
Exactly. The Dynasty lost two of the Kings. I will tell you, from watching that film, because I've watched that film, honestly, about 12 times, the entire game, and just and remember conversations with the players and just watching the film from this year, they're angry, and they are going to take out their pain on somebody. But it woke them up. As acclaimed and as many awards as they have, they want more. The Thrashers, we know what happened with that loss thing. But they didn't get down. They were pissed, and rightfully so, but Kim and Bear had those fellas right.
I don't think they had a reason to get down, though, Terry, because, you know, like I said, I'm a football player. I see what's going on even more. And the league, the players, we as a whole, all the players in the APWFL, probably everyone except of that team that they lost in a forfeit with. I don't know if I should be calling their name now. I'm not going to give them that type of clout. But the team that they lost against, all the players in the league who we respect the Thrashers, we know that. We hate the Thrashers. I'm going to be honest. I hate the Thrashers. And, you know, at Cam, them, they all would be like, T come play for us, but I hate them because they so good. You get what I'm saying? So it's like,
it's a respect thing.
You know, it's a respect thing. So it's like me and Cam will talk, you know, and me and Ben, I call them guys. I actually call them guys and get, you know, pointed from them just on what I should do with certain situations so they know they're my guys. But it's like everybody still to this day just look at the Thrashers as 10-0. Don't get it mistaken. We don't walk around and be like, oh, well, y'all lost against such and such. Like, no one says that because we know, like, you know, that team, they was winning 20-6. So it's like, we most definitely, everyone that I know and all the people that I've been around and talked to, everyone still look at the Thrashers as 10-0, and they deserve that. You know, like, no fluke L is finna, you know what I'm saying, make nobody be like, well, y'all lost that. That'll just be a coward move. So they fully aware that, you know, if anything, we lifted them up at that time because everyone seen that. That was just an unfair situation in that time.
As much as I tell people, and I mean this, I don't care who wins or loses, which I don't. That's one loss. That's a win if I'm that team I wouldn't take. And that's one loss that I don't recognize.
Right.
Because, let's be honest, you're at what, 20-6? How much left in the fourth quarter? Like a little bit change, like some change in the fourth quarter. You go ask anyone who has played any other sport if they would accept that. They wouldn't. There's a code, and I think in semi-pro, that code has been broken a lot because you have folks who will take liberties, who will go outside of football, who will say things outside of football, who, let's be honest, if these things were said in the street, somebody would be picking up their teeth off the ground saying.
Right.
And there's a code that's broken that is long rubbed away, and there's a line. You don't try to take somebody out. That's one of the rules, because players have jobs, they have kids, they have families. That's one thing. And two, if you're lost on the field, you're lost.
Right.
Now, not saying there's not bad officiating, because, yes, at every level of football, there's awful officiating. We know this. However, if I was in that spot, I wouldn't take that win.
No way possible. Now, I wouldn't be able to take that win and call myself a football player after that. Not me.
Because
I know that's how I operate.
Because you want to line up against the other person and their team and try to prove that you're better. And that's just me, but that's how I roll. Do you have any other questions? I'll answer any question.
No, sir. Everything, hey, this has been the Under the Helmet Podcast Special Edition T. Smith Interview Terry Biggs.
Be good to yourself. Be good to each other.